Our study tonight is out of Matthew chapter 7, verses 1 through 6. We'll be spending our time there, but it's also in Luke chapter 6, verses 37 through 42. Righteous versus unrighteous judging. Christ's great Sermon on the Mount provided valuable insight on God's true righteousness, but Israel's religious leaders greatly lacked, as seen in their dead traditionalism. To illustrate the contrast between the Pharisees' unrighteous practices with truly righteous deeds, Jesus gave six illustrations. The sixth illustration deals with the issue of righteousness versus unrighteousness in regards to judging. Matthew 7, 1-6 and Luke 6, 37-42. So we study this passage for insight, application, and edification. I want to read the passage that we have in Matthew 7, verses 1-6 is where we're spending our time tonight. Judge not that ye be not judged, for with what judgment you judge, it shall be judged. You shall be judged. And with what measure you meet, it shall be measured to you again. And why beholdest thou the speck that is in your brother's eye, but considerest not the log that is in your own eye? Or how will you say to your brother, let me pull out the speck out of your eye, and behold, a beam is in your, or a log is in your own eye? Thou hypocrite, first cast out the log out of your own eye, then you shall see clearly to cast out the speck out of your brother's eye. Give not that which is holy unto the dogs, neither cast ye your pearls before swine, lest they trample them under feet, and turn again and attack you. Okay, Christ's directive not to judge other people in Matthew 7, 1 does not mean that we should never distinguish between good and evil or between truth and error in doctrine. For in Matthew chapter 7, verse 5, especially in the English Standard Version, he taught the need for us to take the speck out of a fellow believer's eye. And in Matthew 7, 6, he taught that one should never trust holy things unto unholy people, both commands requiring a judgment between that which is good and that which is evil. Accordingly, the Lord's directive is a prohibition about being censorious. That means that truly righteous people are not to be habitually condemning of other people. That's a good lesson. Well, to clarify what compromises the sin of habitually condemning, Jesus gave the test of hypocrisy. Verses 2 through 5. Jesus warned that one condemns another in pressing judgment, in passing judgment on him, will himself be judged by the measure with which he passed his judgment on the other. And we all know that that works. If we've ever tried to criticize someone else and the other person feels that we're jumping overboard or that we've got a problem, they're very quick to point it out. You got the same problem. If one then sees a mote, that is a very small or dry particle, a speck in his brother's eye, but did not consider the log that was in his own eye, he would not be able effectively to tell his brother that he needed to pull out the very small dry particle or speck in his brother's eye when he had a log in his own eye. The brother would retort that the person with the log had no righteous grounds to hold himself up as a judge in regards to the speck in his own eye. So if one removed the log in his own eye so he could see clearly to remove the speck from his brother's eye, he could qualify to remove the speck in his brother's eye and have his judgment accepted. It would be much more easily accepted if that were the case. So, in summary, to earn the right to make a critical judgment of another person, the one who makes the judgment needs to have his own thinking, his own conduct, and his own beliefs aligned with the righteousness of God before making his judgment. Anything less than that is being sinfully censorious. So that's the test. We have to test, if I'm going to criticize someone else, am I doing the same thing? If I'm doing the same thing, I don't have the right. So I need to clear up my own act. Of course, even then, we might not be in the position, and I could have added this, we may not be in the position to criticize someone else. We have to be in the position of authority in regards to another person before we have the right to actually criticize them. We can go to another person and we can make an appeal. like Esther did to Queen Ahasuerus. She went and she appealed. She had a request. She didn't demand from him. She had a request. And that's one thing that we can do. But before we just take it upon ourselves to criticize with authority, we have to make sure we have the authority to do that. Now, as for Matthew 7, 6, Jesus warned against voicing a criticism to morally deficient people, even if the one making the judgment is unhypocritically upright. For morally deficient people often react in harmful ways. I don't know if you've ever thought of this, but try going down to New York City someday on a street corner and critiquing somebody. You might get your face knocked in. I mean, it's really tough. In New York, you just don't want to do that. I'll never forget my brother when he was a little kid. He was about 4 years of age. We'd come home from Africa, and he'd been taught that smoking was bad. And he walked up to a perfect stranger there in New York City and saying, "Hey, you're sinning, you're smoking." Like that, he was 3 years of age, and the guy looked at this little kid like, "What in the world do you think you are?" Yeah, but he didn't. He says, "Well, make sure that you don't start doing it yourself. You know, don't be like me." So fortunately, he took it well. You know, but Paul could have gotten in a lot of trouble. Mom and Dad had to learn to rein him in a hurry. In New York, you don't do that. You just don't volunteer your opinion. You're going to get in trouble. So in Israel, during Jesus' earthly life, dogs and pigs were despised. So the dogs and pigs in Matthew 7, 6 refer to unholy people. People who despised righteous standards and trampled under feet their pearls of righteousness, wisdom, and others tried to teach them. Such unholy people were often harmful, seen in Jesus' Matthew 7, 6 ESV warning that when one tries to throw pearls of corrective wisdom toward unholy people, the unholy ones can not only trample those pearls of corrective wisdom underfoot, but can also turn to attack you. So we've got to be very careful. So even if a believer is not hypocritical or hypocritical, but lives a righteous life, he needs to be careful not to go about expressing criticism even of people who really are evil and deserve to be criticized. For evil people often are not only not prepared to accept correction, but they can abuse those who offer righteous criticism. So the lesson is truly righteous people or believers, unlike the Pharisees, are not hypocritical critics of others, but they correct their own faults before sharing their criticisms of others who deserve to be corrected. However, it is wise for even correct and unhypocritical people not to criticize unholy people like the Pharisees, for unholy people not only often reject the pearls of helpfully corrective wisdom, but they often attack their critics. So in application, before we criticize another person for a wrong, we must be sure that we are not guilty of the same wrong, lest our criticism be ineffective and we face retaliation. Number two, we need to avoid criticizing unholy people who do not value words of corrective wisdom and who also attack those who criticize them. In summary, we must rely on the Holy Spirit to know if we should criticize another party, and if so, that we do so constructively. And sometimes, you know, Dr. Ryrie in his book says in Ephesians that we're supposed to speak the truth in love. Sometimes love demands that you don't say anything. Because even if you speak the truth, it can react in a harmful way. Now, there's a place where we have to share criticism. And you'll notice a lot of the teaching that we do in the preaching, we are critical. But we have the capacity to do that. We have to speak from the pulpit. But the point is we try very hard not to point it out and humiliate another individual if we can help it. Sometimes you have no choice. But we have to be very, very careful as we share that criticism with other people. I'll never forget one time when I was a young man, I was in high school at the time. My parents thought that I was guilty of something that I wasn't guilty of, but I couldn't tell them because if I shared with them what I thought, they were not prepared to accept it because of certain circumstances. And so they decided to go ahead and punish me. And I thought, I can't do anything. I'm really locked in this situation here. If I tell them what's really going on here, they're not going to believe me anyway. So I had to take the punishment. I took the punishment. And inside I was, it was a cauldron. I was just burning up. But thankfully God helped me keep my mouth shut. Many years later, after I was a pastor, my mother found out the other side and said, "Did you know this fact or that fact?" And I said, "Yeah, I knew that." "Well, why didn't you say something?" I said, "Mom, you wouldn't have believed me." And she was, you could see the color drained out of her face. She was horrified. She realized, whoops, we blew it at that particular point. But she never spoke to me about it again. I never spoke to her about it. But that made me grateful at that particular point that I'd kept my mouth shut. But it was a learning thing. I learned from that situation. There are certain circumstances when even if you've got the truth on your side, you can't say anything because it's not prepared. People are not prepared to listen to it. People are not open to it. And that so you have to gauge what you're saying. Sometimes you don't have a choice. Sometimes, you know, it's a catch-22. You're in trouble if you do it. You're in trouble if you don't. And so you have to look at the greater good and go from that perspective. But the Lord was indicating here, we need to be careful that, first of all, we come clean in our relationship with the Lord first before we earn the right to criticize. And then if we have the right to criticize, we have to look at, do I have the authority to do that in this situation? And then is this going to be something that's going to edify, or is this going to be something that's going to be like water off a duck's back, or is it going to make matters worse? So you have to be careful about that. Sometimes you don't have a choice. The Lord requires that you have to go ahead with the situation because of the greater good, but that's where the Lord has to lead, and that's where the Holy Spirit leads. But I think there's a hidden value behind this entire instruction, and that is we need to look at every human being as made in the image of God. So every person deserves to be treated with respect, genuine respect. That being the case, we have to be careful so that we always are showing respect. There is a place for criticism if it can be done in a constructive manner and if the person is open to that. And or someone may come and they may ask you, "I don't think I've done well in this area. What do you think?" Now, that's an open door, okay? But still, we have to be careful how we go about that, so that we don't tear somebody down. Every person is worth respecting and honoring, and that's something we need to keep in mind.